Hi everyone, this is Susan Knowles in a new segment that I would like to call Knowles on the News. I want to talk to you today about what's been occurring in Baltimore. What we have seen has been just a travesty in Americans looking at government and how government is being run. If you were looking at this as a way to explain to your children or to somebody else about how a government should have been run and should be run, you are seeing the worst of the worst, I believe, in Baltimore. And it's really a shame that it's occurring like that, but it is nonetheless what we are seeing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, what I'm referring to, I'm talking about what's happened to Baltimore following the death of Freddie Gray, a young man, 25-year-old African-American, who died about a week after he was taken into police custody by the Baltimore Police Department. Now, there's been a huge discrepancy so far of what occurred. Some are looking at it as a criminal act. Others are looking at it as something quite different. And to be quite honest with you, we don't have all the facts this time. We do have some information from the medical examiner that we haven't seen, that we're told is evidence that Freddie Gray's death was a homicide. We also have information coming from the state's attorney who says that, in fact, it was a homicide, that others are alleged, you know, to have committed manslaughter, false imprisonment, assault. Now, those are her rulings, of course. There hasn't been a trial yet. A jury hasn't even been selected. So this is just the charges that she's bringing. And just bringing charges is not enough to convict anyone. And let's keep that clear, because that is important. I know in our day and age, it seems like we're guilty until presumed innocent. But it's just the opposite. You are still in this country today innocent until proven guilty. So we should not be assuming really anything at this point. We don't have evidence in our hands one way or the other to convict or not convict these people. So let's kind of keep that in mind as we go forward. You know, again, in looking at this case, sort of what stands out right away is that here was this man that was stopped, and we are told by the state's attorney now that it was an illegal stop. There was no probable cause. Again, these are her allegations. There are others who are saying that he was stopped for perhaps making a drug sale and that he had drugs in his system. We don't know. This person was then arrested, put inside of a police van, and at some point between putting him in there and stopping a couple of times, one time to pick up another prisoner, when he arrived at the police department, he was unresponsive. He was taken to a hospital. And he died about a week later. And from what we have heard in the news, his spinal cord was almost severed, which is, you know, an egregious type of injury that this person suffered. Some are claiming that it was due to his own hands of trying to hurt himself in the van. There was an eyewitness who corroborated that was inside the van, saying he heard that and then recanted it, supposedly. Again, we don't know. And so we don't really know what happened, whether it was because he wasn't seatbelted, somebody did something to him, or he was trying to hurt himself. We don't know. Let's talk about now things that we really do know. We've seen the reaction of how the police department acted. We've seen how the mayor has acted. So we've seen the reactions following the death of Freddie Gray, and specifically following his funeral everything just broke loose. Riots began, bottles being thrown. Police were called out by the mayor. We see the police in certain clips on TV being, you know, standing in a line with their riot gear, you know, the shields, the batons, helmets on, standing in a line, trying to get the crowd to disperse and move back, showing great restraint, not doing anything at that point. And we see the crowd, you know, getting more and more out of control. At one point, you know, unfortunately, you know, looting, rioting started at the CVS pharmacy, which eventually led to it being burned down. And another, I believe, a liquor store that was in a row of houses or apartments. It was looted and eventually set on fire. And at a certain point, we witness youth, I guess, and we're supposed to be assume, and we're told that it was, started throwing what appeared to be rocks. Some have said it was more like cement blocks, being thrown at these officers. And instead of the officers reacting basically to defend themselves, because I don't know if you know this or not, but a rock that is about the size of your fist, that can kill you. If it hits the right spot of your head, breaks your nose just the right way, whatever, you can die from that. These people were not throwing pebbles at these officers. They were throwing heavy objects. And instead of the officers moving forward, becoming more aggressive in the situation, arresting people, taking them down, whatever they needed to do to protect themselves, we see them running backwards. And, you know, with the rock still coming, with the crowd still coming, we see the officers in retreat. They showed extraordinary restraint. Now it's coming out in the news, possibly, that the mayor's office ordered them to stand down. So here we have, you know, the progressive liberal retreat and stand down that we've heard so many times in the news. These officers should have been able to protect themselves. And I would think that their union is going to have a lot to say after this is all over as to how the mayor conducted herself and the commands that the mayor gave out to this police force in telling them to stand down. And then we have the mayor who came out and said, you know, we just wanted to protect these people. And then the mayor I'm talking about is Stephanie Rawlings Blake. She said, while we tried to make sure that they were protected from the cars and the other things that were going on, referring to the protesters, we also gave those who wished to destroy space to do that as well. You know, when I read that, space to destroy, I was absolutely shocked at her statement. And I want to say that with some reservation, because, you know, on the one hand, I understand why she said that. It was totally unprofessional, in my opinion. Something that a mayor should never have said, you know, in public. Maybe she thought that way personally. But I think, in a way, what she was trying to do is say, you know, I understand you. I'm an African American. So all of you African Americans who are out there and angry and rioting and looting, I get you. I feel you. And, you know, if you want to do that on a personal level, on your own time, go do that. But that is not how an official of the city government of any city should be sounding. It's unprofessional. And when this is over, that should really be looked into, in regards to her professionalism, but don't hold your breath. She is a Democrat in a Democrat-run city that's been run Democrat for a number of years. And, you know, even though this was videotaped with audio tape, you know, with her voice on it, she says, you know, that wasn't me. I didn't, well, it was me, but I didn't say that. I would never say anything like that. I really think that she probably took a lesson right out of the Obama handbook because, you know, haven't we heard him say things like, well, if you want to keep your doctor, you can do so, you know, when it comes to Obamacare. It's like these people have the same book that they use and everybody knows what to say and how to get out of things. It's preposterous. You know, I don't mind if you... I agree with her in one way. Let's have space to destroy. I'll grant you that. I agree with her. Let's give you space to destroy. As long as it's your own property. When you start destroying the private property of the citizens of Baltimore, then it's not okay. It's called a crime. That would be like her telling an arsonist, you know, if you're not happy with something, just go burn down a building. It's okay. We're going to give you space to do that. And no, it's not okay. It should never have been something that came out of the mouth of any city official. And I think that, you know, she, as a mayor, at that moment, she failed to act in the best interest of that city. And there should be consequences to her for that. But as I said again, you know, that's not going to happen. Likelihood of that happening. It's just not going to happen. And telling the police officers to stand down, that's not in the best interest of the people of Baltimore. And there should be repercussions for that. Mm. And most likely, there won't be. There is a way to have her removed from office if the governor of the state of Maryland wanted to do so. Basically, all that would need be done is to have a conviction in a court of law of some willful neglect of duty or misbehavior in office, and then she could be removed. I really feel that those proceedings should be started, and we should, you know, if you're in Baltimore, you should be looking at having your mayor removed from office for saying something like that. She didn't act in your best interest. And due to some of the things that she said, I think there's a strong argument here that a lot of the looting and everything went on because it's almost like she gave those people, those looters, the rioters, the ones that she later called thugs and then apologized for, she gave them a green light to go and do, you know, what they wanted to do. I think, you know, we're living in a day and age when the content of your character and your actions are secondary to other issues that may be interfering with government officials. The interference of them making the rational decisions that further the best interests of those they claim to serve. You know, we have buildings that have been burned down, businesses destroyed, lives destroyed, and there are people right now who are in Baltimore, who rely on those services of the CVS pharmacy to have their prescriptions filled. And so that business right now is shut down. And from what I understand, other businesses in the area, such as pharmacies, you know, they shut down. Where are these people going to go? You know, are these looters and rioters going to come pick these people up and take them next to another city so they can pick up their prescriptions? You know, that is after calling and having new prescriptions sent out and things of that nature. And what about those people that worked at CVS? Where are they going to work now? These are people in the neighborhoods that worked there. That was their livelihood. And now it's gone. And what about the new senior center that got burned down? Where are those seniors going to go now that place that they were looking to move into has now been destroyed by the looters and rioters? And you know what? those people now are saying, hey, you know, don't call us thugs. Thugs, the new N-word. See, that's what progressives do. If they don't like something, they will change the meaning of it, and so that you won't be able to use your First Amendment free speech rights in order to say and call something what it is. So, and by not being able to do that, so now if you call somebody a thug because of their behavior is such, people are saying, you know, the progressives, oh no, you can't do that. That's the new N-word. So if you can't say the word thug, and you have to maybe call these people disenfranchised members who are angry, okay? You're not able to get rid of behavior that's inappropriate, because from now on, that type of behavior is going to be looked at as just, oh my gosh, these are people who need a space to destroy. And we should feel bad because we've made them do that behavior. No accountability for the behavior of yourself. It's somebody else's fault, somebody else's problem. And no matter, you know, no matter how angry you are, no one can make you do something if you choose not to. You know, it's a shame, because I think, you know, if people had a grief about another killing that they perceived as being, you know, white on black crime, they should have gone through the right channels, the right steps. And I know I can hear people now, oh no, we've tried to do that before and it's never worked. No, I don't think so. I grew up in the South. I understand, you know, I haven't been in your shoes, but I do understand what's been going on, because I've been on the receiving end of it. I've seen it, and I know that a lot of it is based on skin color and not character. We got to stop doing that, people. We really do. But there are better ways to resolve issues than to do this. And I hate to point this out to everyone, but there were 3 black police officers and 3 white police officers involved in the incident with Freddie Gray. And almost immediately, because now once again, the progressives have to change what we're looking at, because we wanted it to be white police officers against a black man. We wanted that so badly, but that's not what it is. And in fact, the person with the highest charge of homicide in this case, the driver of the van, is actually a black man. But right away in the news, we hear people coming out and saying something to the order of, well, but these black people kind of just, once they've been around white people, they start acting like the white people and doing what they would do. What? Really? You're saying that? You know, to me, if I were a black person and I heard that, I would be so insulted. Because that makes you sound like you have absolutely no ability to think on your own, that you are easily persuaded by anyone and anything that comes along, and that you will mindlessly follow and do whatever. How insulting is that? I don't care who you are. If somebody says that about you, you should be insulted. Because it makes it appear that you are just a mindless piece of flesh walking around, that anybody can open up your head and feed information into your brain, and like a robot, you'll just do whatever you'll do because somebody else told you to do it or somebody else is doing it, whatever. It's the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard. Getting back to the mayor, another thing that she did is that she should have called for a curfew that first night. And she didn't. Again, because she was giving people, I'm assuming, space to destroy. hoping, I guess, that the first night everybody would get it all out of their systems. And then, you know, everybody will go back to being, you know, whatever normality was before all of this happened. That didn't happen, though, did it? It really just got worse. And, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. If you are a parent or you've babysat a child in anywhere in your lifetime, you know that if a child is acting inappropriately, let's say a child is hitting her brother. She's 3 years old, he's 5 years old. Oh, let's make it a little bit. Look, she's five and he's seven. And she's hitting her brother. And as parents, you just sit there and watch that, let it go on. Because you think, oh, you know what, they'll just work that out. I don't need to do anything. Let's just give them space to destroy. And then we'll come back and it'll all be okay. So you sit and you watch for a while. She gets a little tired. She stops for a little while. About a half hour or so later, he starts crying again. You go in and see what's wrong. Oh my gosh. This time, she's picked up a plastic bottle that was empty plastic bottle laying on the floor and hits him over the head with it. Now it's escalated. She was just using her hands and kind of smacking at him before, and now she's picked up a plastic bottle, a container on the floor, and starts hitting him over the head with it. So you still don't say anything. It'll stop. So you wait. About 30 minutes later, you hear some more commotion going on in the other room. This time you go in, she's picking up shoes. Shoes that she's finding, little play toys on the floor, and continues, you know, starts throwing this at her brother. And you know, five-year-olds can't do too much harm, but looters can, rioters can, people who are mad can, who are adults. But you watch this little girl continue to throw things at her brother. So what's happened? Things have escalated. Why do they escalate? Okay, here's where the rocket scientist part comes in, right? It escalated because when you first saw inappropriate behavior, you didn't shut it down. If you give a child leeway to continue to do inappropriate behavior, you're going to continue to see that inappropriate behavior. It's just logical. And I know that's difficult for progressives to see, but it's just logical that if you let something that's inappropriate go, whether you're an adult or a child, most likely, and more times than not, and more times than you really should, you know, let go to see what the effects are going to be, especially when you have something that can cause serious bodily injury or property damage, more times than not, it's going to get worse. But if you stop it when you first see it, then most likely it's going to stop. And if it doesn't stop, then that's when you arrest people. That's when you give the police the right to do what they need to do in order to protect themselves and others. We can't have a society that is out of control. And you may say, well, the police are out of control. You know, we can make up any excuse that we want. People will always break the law. There will always be lawbreakers. But that doesn't mean that everybody else gets a free pass. You know, this isn't the Bill Clinton days. People shouldn't get a free pass to be able to do the same thing. You know, just because he did it with Monica Lewinsky, now we can all do things that way and we can all lie about it. No, sorry, it doesn't work that way. You can't have a society that's free of chaos if you work things that way and everybody just says, well, you did it, so I can do it. No. It won't work. And we're seeing a great example of that in Baltimore. And it didn't stop until, you know, here comes the National Guard and here comes the curfew. You know, again, it's kind of like we let it escalate so far that then there has to be drastic steps taken where you call in the National Guard. And I, you know, the mayor took credit for that along with the governor. I don't know who called them in. I'd say more than likely it was probably the governor who said, you know what, we have a problem on our hands here, and we need to stop this right now before it really gets out of hand. And the mayor's like, okay, let's just do that. Well, I guess they've had enough space to destroy, so maybe now we can move on. It's really a travesty and a tragedy to see this type of thing happening in such a city, or again, or in any city like Baltimore, to see this government agencies, you know, the individuals who are in the leadership positions doing this to the city. And then we have the state's attorney, Baltimore state's attorney. This young woman, good for her that she's in that position, got elected to that position. She's obviously smart. I don't care how many people help you get to a position that way. You have to have some brains. You got to pass the bar. And having passed the bar, I know that state bars are not easy to pass. Some are easier than others. I passed one of the hardest, which was California's. I think New York's is probably very difficult. And I would have to hope that Maryland's was somewhere in between, if not, you know, right up there with everything else. But we have a state's attorney who, you know, following all of this that happened, she comes out and she says, basically, Mr. Gray suffered a critical neck injury as a result of being handcuffed, shackled by his feet, and unrestrained inside the Baltimore Police Department wagon. And as a result of looking at the medical examiner's evidence, and as a result of looking at my own independent investigation conducted by my department, we are going to arrest and charge these six officers. Again, six black officers, six white officers. We're going to charge them with homicide, manslaughter, all the way down to assault and false imprisonment. Great. You know, some people have said, why did she do that? And she can't do that. And, you know, it's not going to stick. All of that may be true. You know, in order to find somebody guilty of murder and manslaughter, the burden of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt. It's based upon just in what's been in the news. And again, we don't have all the facts. It is going to be very difficult to show such a disregard for human life that you did a criminal act that resulted in their death. Is it possible? Sure. Is it going to be a difficult case? Absolutely. But she has the right to bring those charges. Now, here's what people are being very critical of about her in doing so. When I talk to people following her press conference, you know, people were like, why is she so angry? Why is she talking like that? Well, partially because that's how state's attorneys and district attorneys, that's how they talk. You know, you can't come out and act like you don't have a great case, or gosh, I'm just not sure about what I'm doing. You know, you have to speak in a confident manner before anyone will believe you or have confidence in the fact that you know how to do your job. So, again, I don't fault her for coming out and doing that. There are some things, though, that really need to be looked at and that don't, in my opinion, don't bode so well for how she handled herself during that press conference. Now, in the beginning, she came out and, as best as she could under the circumstances, seemingly gave a neutral statement. Like, here are the facts. here are the charges, boom. You know, that right there, that's where she should have ended. Because that sounded like an official for the state department, you know, the state attorneys for Baltimore City. It sounded like a legal representative. And that's what legal representatives do. They come out, they're usually, you know, not emotional, but confident. They come out, they state the facts, and say, this is what we're going to go after, done. She didn't do that. We started to hear then, following that, more of her personal opinion. More of her, I'm one of you, and I'm out to get justice. And this is why I'm doing it. No. Miss State's Attorney, you represent the people of Baltimore City. The people. That means regardless of age, gender, ethnicity, whatever. You represent everyone. And you, in your capacity, want justice for the people of Baltimore City, period. But she went further than that. She said, I heard your call for no justice, no peace. And your peace is sincerely needed as I work to deliver justice on behalf of this young man. No. Again, it's the entire population of Baltimore City that you represent, not just those saying no justice, no peace. And yes, you do want to get justice for the victim in this case, if there was a victim in this case, and we know that there is a man who died because of what happened, whether self-inflicted, accidental, murder, or something else, a person died. But directing your comments to looters, rioters, in my opinion, was very inappropriate and took her out of her position and made it more of her personal opinion. And again, her personal opinion in her capacity as state's attorney doesn't matter, and it shouldn't matter. She then addressed everybody about her feelings about the police department and telling them that she'd come from 5 generations of law enforcement. If I'm in Baltimore City as a citizen, I don't need to know that. I don't care. I want to know what evidence you have, what evidence you're going forward with, and how you're going to win this case. That's all I care about. Unless there's some other reason that I should be concerned, and we'll get to that in a minute. She then turns again, once again, forgetting that she is the state's attorney. She steps outside of that role and begins to say, directing her comments to the youth. And she says specifically, to the youth of this city, I will seek justice on your behalf. This is a moment. This is our moment. Let's ensure that we have peaceful and productive rallies that will develop structural and systematic changes for generations to come. You're at the forefront of this cause, and as young people, our time is now. What? You know, this isn't a pep rally at a basketball, baseball, football game. This is a legal process that should be conducted with impartiality, with no appearance of partiality or sort of, you know, inappropriateness of any kind. An appearance of impropriety. That should be something that should never be questioned. And immediately, the Baltimore chapter of the Fraternal Order of Police, the Officers Union, came out and asked herself to recuse herself from the case. And basically what that would mean is allowing another office to prosecute this case. And that's, a, you know, that's that happens. It doesn't happen too often, but it does happen. Now, why would the union, and it was a man, the president of the union, Gene Ryan, why would he have the right to do that? Well, first of all, and I don't think this is what he used, but if I were him, I would say, first of all, the fact that you are catering to looters and the rioters of the town, and that's your motive, would make me suspect about what evidence you really have and why you did this. Do you really have evidence that's, you know, going to be beyond a reasonable doubt somewhere down the road when this goes to trial? Or did you do this to try to cater to these people and to stop a riot or do something else? I don't know. That would be the first thing. The second thing is, what he said was that she has been supported politically by Freddie Gray's attorney, the deceased's attorney. Basically, from it's alleged that he gave money for her political campaign. You know, that right there, you know, he's saying that's a conflict of interest. And he's got a good point. Now, whether it will make a difference, I don't know. But it is something that needs to be looked at. And the next thing is that her husband is a city councilman, and that basically what she does, in effect, could make or break his political career. Whew! You know, I mean, that could be said about anything that she does, but I don't know how much the other cases that she's handled, and she's only been doing this a couple months, how many of the cases that she's handled are of this caliber, will have such a significant impact, and already has, on the city of Baltimore. So he raises a very good point. Now, you know, in my own opinion, again, I don't have the evidence. I don't know any more than you know. And a lot of it is just what he said, she said. So I think that, you know, my opinion, I'm going to wait until all the facts are out before I make an opinion about this case. I will say that solely based upon what has been in the news, and again, all of that can change, they may have a very hard time proving these charges beyond a reasonable doubt. And when that occurs, or if that occurs, you're going to have, again, people who are saying, oh my gosh, you know, this is because of racism that you didn't convict these people, or that you lowered the charges for these people. You know, it's kind of like some of the people in Baltimore, you know, obviously want these officers to be, you know, put in jail before we've even had the trial. And you know what? This is still America. I know things are kind of upside down and have been for past 6 years, but you can't do that. You know, think about it. Would you want the same for your family? Would you want people to be put in jail before they're even tried? I mean, does that make any type of sense at all? You know, no system is perfect, but you have to use the system that you have. And from what I'm also hearing in the news is that driver is having horrible problems right now emotionally, because, you know, he can't understand why he's being charged for murder. And I know some people are saying, well, you know, I don't care, I don't have sympathy for him because, you know, Freddie Gray is dead. And I get that, but at the same time, if this man isn't guilty of homicide, then I think, you know, people should have some empathy. Until, again, all facts are out there on the table. I think we in this country, we are so quick to want to transform everything. Let's just take our whole judicial system and throw it out the window. Let's transform that like we've transformed the rest of the country. And now we have Al Sharpton, who, you know, probably couldn't wait to get in there, who's transforming how now the city of Baltimore is being run. And what do I mean by that? I mean Al Sharpton, who basically starts fielding questions for the mayor. Excuse me, Al, who are you? And excuse me, mayor, why do you let Al Sharpton come in and start running your city for you? You're showing more of your incompetence by allowing that to happen. If you can run your city, then I suggest that you run your city and not have Al Sharpton come in and start doing that for you. And now Al Sharpton, from what I've read in the news, wants to start having, you know, wanting the DOJ to basically turn the police department and all police departments into, you know, run by the federal government. Well, you know, we've got almost everything now run by the federal government, and we can see how many problems that we have. We've got the banking system, the healthcare system, practically everything. It's too long of a list for me to go into. Are now running the United States, and as they do so, and they print more money, and they do this, and they do that, our economy is going down. Racial relationships have probably been the lowest that they've been, I don't know, since the 1960s. And again, I've seen this. I've witnessed this. I grew up in the South during the 60s when Martin Luther King was alive. Riots everywhere, not caused by Martin Luther King, because he did not believe in rioting and looting, but people like Malcolm X, who encouraged people to go out and do that. So if that didn't work in the 1960s, why is it going to work now, people? It's not going to work. You can't just go out and burn down cities and everything else. You lose as well as everyone else. You really do. It makes people not want to listen, and maybe you don't care. Maybe at this point you just don't care. Instead of listening, it's like, who cares? I'm just going to go out and burn down the city. You know, I thought the goal was to get people to care. So, you know, if you want to come to the table and talk, great. Let's all do that. You know, if there's things that people need to hear that needs to be said and we need to discuss, let's all do that. But you can't get people to have sympathy and empathy for you when you're throwing rocks at them, screaming at them, burning down businesses. And again, most of these are businesses that are in your own neighborhoods, businesses that support your family, your relatives. I mean, how could you do that to your own family? It makes no sense. None of this is making sense. You know, if Dr. King were here today, he would be absolutely calling for peace and calm. He got where he got as far as race relations were concerned because he went in with love, but he was diligent and he took one step in front of the other. And he was moving forward, not moving backward. This is moving backward. Again, this is the 1960s all over again that didn't cause anything. You know, nothing good came out of it when people were rioting and shooting and killing. Nothing good ever comes out of harming other people, harming property, destruction. Nothing ever good comes out of it. And you know, one of the things too, I want to remind the gang members. I'm talking to the gang members now. If you're listening to the radio, you said that, you know, you were coming together not to hurt the cops in Baltimore, but that you were standing together in order to stop what was happening in Baltimore and to have peace return to your city. Well, you know, I want to know, are you going to follow through on that? You know, you might say, well, they're not rioting anymore. We don't need to do anything else. Here's my point. If you can do that for a day, a week, coming together for a day or a week in order to help out in the city, to be a force of good in the city, why can't you just do that all the time? Why can't you just lay aside your weapons, put aside your hate towards each other, and work together for the future of the youth of America, or at least the youth in Baltimore City? Why can't you do that? You, as a gang member, are powerful leaders, but powerful leaders in a negative, negative way. And I know this to be true. My own personal story is when I was doing my internship, if you will, at a school, there was a young man, 17 years old, an African-American young man, who was a big guy. He was this big teddy bear, and he looked like a man, but at 17, you know, you're not a man yet, you're still a boy, right? So he was on his way to school one day, standing at the bus stop with his peers, just waiting on the bus. A gang member sees him, thinks he's from a rival gang, runs across the street with his shotgun. The 17-year-old kid starts to run, trying to get away and also trying to get the attention away from his peers onto himself so that they wouldn't be hurt. That's what his peers said. And as he's running, the gang member takes aim, shoots him, and the force was so strong that it threw the kid up against the wall and broke his neck, and he died. And as I sat in the funeral home, attending his funeral, I was taken aback at how there were rival gangs in that church sitting peacefully together. And why was that occurring? Because the rival gang was showing their respect to the family to say, we made a mistake. We killed your son because we thought he was a man and not a boy. What a sick and disgusting waste of life. Tragic death that to this day, that happened in 2003, and 12 years later, it impacts my life almost on a daily basis. And me remembering that young man who died and never got a chance to make something of this world and to help this world. He wanted to go into the Air Force and get out of the neighborhood that he knew would kill him if he didn't get out of. And guess what? He was right. Instead of killing that young man, and instead of killing people and harming people in your neighborhood, you could be helping people like the young man that I knew and finding a better life for himself, in influencing him in such a way that he could impact the world. And you know, it's so ironic, he died on Martin Luther King's birthday. And that was probably one of his last memories, is that he knew it was Martin Luther King's birthday. He was on his way to school, and he was going to celebrate with his classmates. And every Martin Luther King birthday, I'm reminded of how this man, this young boy, could have turned out to be another Martin Luther King, but for the fact that he was wrongly and unjustly killed. And not by a white guy. I know everybody wants to make this a racial story. No. Sorry. Just didn't happen. color doesn't matter. When can people get that through their heads? When can we start seeing each other as human beings instead of making every single solitary issue a race issue? It's ridiculous. So I ask those gang members to continue what they're doing, improve their own lives, change their own situation, and then change the youth in their neighborhood so that they will have an opportunity to live a life that has meaning, that can impact in a positive way the lives of others in America, in their neighborhood, in the world. We really have to quit looking at each other as if we're not human. And, you know, the gang member said, this is what we're doing. Well, you know what? Good for you. If that's what you were doing and you didn't want to hurt anybody, but you came together for peace, you can keep doing it every single day. You did it one day, one week in Baltimore. It was done in the church I was sitting in at the funeral of that young man. Two rival gangs sitting in the same church, coming together because of a tragedy that had occurred. You can keep doing that. You can keep changing lives in a positive way. But you know, you can only do that if you're willing to stop seeing things the way that you are right now, the things that make you want to harm other people for whatever reason. If you change yourself, then you can get the youth to follow you, and then you can change the world. It can be done. It's done every day by those who want to make a positive difference in this world. And I really hope that Baltimore can get back to the type of place where people stop blaming everybody else and they stop looking at everything through the eyes of racism. Not everything is about race. There are people in this world who are going to hate people because they're too this, too that, they're this color instead of that color, they're too rich, they're too poor, whatever. We need to just be who we are. We need to stop looking at other people and comparing ourselves to them, or not comparing ourselves to them, or whatever you want to talk about. We need to stop doing that. You can't force people to give you anything. You can't force people to like you. You can't force people to change history. You know, it has to be, who are you? What is your character? Who do you want to be? How can you make a difference? What are you going to do that's going to make a difference to the lives of others in this world? It's only then, when you stop and you start thinking about those things, can you actually change what's going on. We need a nation that will pull together. We need to start healing. You know, a lot of these people that are coming to these riots, they're not even people in Baltimore. They Occupy Wall Street paid people who come there just because it gives them something to do. And it gets chaos. It gets people hating each other. They make things up. They do whatever they want to do because it's about getting what they want. And I'll tell you where we're headed. And you've heard this. And I'm not looking at a crystal ball. You know, people have said what's going to happen is if things get out of control, you know, you're looking at a militarized police force that's federalized. And you're looking at somewhere down the line, you know, this curfew, you think that the curfew interrupted your life. I mean, people are calling for, let's get the curfew out of here. We're people, we're adults. We don't need a curfew. Yeah, unfortunately, you did need a curfew because you didn't act like adults. You didn't stop yourself. You didn't choose not to do things that you shouldn't have done, that were illegal. So what's the next step beyond a curfew? Martial law. And you know what happens in martial law? Every single constitutional right that you ever had will be gone. And, you know, even during the curfew, I watched as the reporters were telling the police, hey, you can't make us do what you're asking other people to do. We have a right to be out here. We're reporting the news. We have First Amendment rights as a press to report the news. Yeah, they do. But you know what happens when you have chaos? Chaos begets chaos. Love begets love. Your choice. Which kind of world do you want to live in? What do you want? Do you want the chaos to continue so that all of your rights are gone? Said that you're burning down buildings and that nobody has anything? You know, we're all equal because we'll all have nothing. That's what it'll be. Is that the type of world that you really want to live in? Or do you want a world where people sit down and they really talk and they try to understand each other and they try to make changes? You know, people are people. And for the most part, if you just find commonality, common ground with people, you can move forward. But if you're not willing to sit and talk, if you're not willing to look for the ways that we are alike, then you're never going to be able to have a coming together. You know, that's why with people who go to church, what makes things so great, you can be any color, any gender, any size, shape, this, that, and the other, and they all come together because of one thing, and that is worshiping God. That is the common ground. And that's when you can sit in church with somebody that perhaps you wouldn't be seen with outside of church. And you could worship side by side, get along, because you have that one common element. And you're not focused on all of the differences, all of the hatred, all of the this and all of the that. And so, just like, you know, with the gang members when I'm talking to them. If you can do it while you're in church, guess what? You can apply those principles outside of church. You can find common ground and you can come together. As I said before, this nation needs a healing. And it's going to take people who are willing to set aside differences, to see each other through the lenses that they would want to be seen themselves, and to lead this country to a place where people have more things in common than they have differences. That's why when we talked about melting pots in history, why America was so great, we were a melting pot where we all came together. We could have our own culture, we could have our own likes and dislikes, but at the end of the day, we were all Americans and we all came together. So I'm hoping that the people of Baltimore and the people of the United States of America can come together, can start to heal, and can show our politicians that we are able as Americans to take charge of ourselves, and we will. This is Susan Knowles for Knowles on the News. Take care.